Needy, read by Patricia Hodge.
Heather had received what she considered her fair share of Valentines in her life. She wasn't a heartbreaker or a great beauty, so she wouldn't have expected dozens of cards with red hearts, verses and poems on them. On the other hand, she was an ordinary red-blooded young woman who loved people or fancied them, and was loved and fancied in return. So the morning of February the 14th always meant two or three cards anyway. One might be a joke from her friend Ruth, one might be from a current beau, and one a mystery. For her part, Heather sent a Valentine every year to Ruth, purporting to be from someone ludicrous, to her current beau, and to a seriously unattractive author, who once said on a radio programme that he'd never had a Valentine in his life. Heather was a great reader, and she felt that no author should have to labour on writing books with such a secret sorrow. Nobody was surprised that she went to work in a bookshop when she left school. It seemed to be just the right setting for her, and then she left home to get a bedsitter to be nearer work. Well, that's what everyone said, but really it was so that she could grow up without the anxious eyes of her parents beamed on her all the time. It was much easier to leave home and visit them once a week with scant but reassuring takes of her life in the big world. Very little information about Richard, however, when Heather fell in love with him. Richard had a wife and children in the country. He went home to them at weekends. From Monday to Friday, he and Heather shared an elegant flat halfway between the advertising agency where he worked and Heather's bookshop. Ruth said he was Mr. Slimy Two-Timer. But she also said that it was Heather's life, and she must do with it as she wished. At work, nobody inquired much about private lives. They just seemed sorry that Heather wasn't more available for office outings. Richard said that he adored Heather, and that, to be frank, he had the best life in the world, as he came back late from entertaining the agency's clients to a flat where Heather kept everything extremely comfortable for him. And Heather thought to herself that, to be frank, he was right. He did have the best life in the world. No cooking, cleaning, shopping, ironing, in either place. But she loved him too much to admit that anywhere except at the back of her mind. For this St. Valentine's Day, Heather had painted a little card and written a poem about their being 5 years together. She got her hair done and looked, without pleasure, at her reflection. Wispy hair, anxious eyes. "Work miracles, do you hear?" she had told the stylist. That night, at 6:20, Richard told her that he didn't love her any more. He said they had gone into this thing as equals, promising to be honest and open with each other. So he was being just that, and telling her it was over. Heather sat down very suddenly. In her handbag was the carefully painted card and the loving poem. She looked at him in disbelief, trying to listen to the reasons why he didn't love her any more. They seemed to have something to do with her making too many demands on him. She was too needy, he said. He kept using the word over and over again. Needy. It was a terrible word. It rhymed with greedy. And apparently it was the worst thing you could possibly be, always wanting attention and to be the centre of things and needing him to be at her beck and call. At first she wondered, was this an elaborate joke? Would he produce from behind his back a bunch of dark red roses, a gold locket and a pair of tickets to Paris next weekend? Then she realised that he meant it. Heather asked herself if it could be stress on his part, the beginning of a nervous breakdown. The advertising industry was known for this. Burnout was what they called it. Poor darling Richard must have burnout. She would stand by him, assure him that it was utterly normal and acceptable, get him over it. She wouldn't take any notice of all these ridiculous accusations and strange words he was hurling at her. They were just nonsense. She put on a concerned face and listened to his plans for the future. It must have been that night that what other people called her nervous breakdown began. It wasn't very clear either at the time or later when she looked back on it. They had been marvellous in the bookshop where she worked. Leave had been arranged immediately. Her colleagues came to see her in hospital. Her job was there for her when she was better. "What happened?" they would ask her sometimes. "I don't know," Heather would reply, truthfully. On other occasions, she would ask them what had happened, and they didn't know either. Her parents said it was all to do with overwork, that she put in too many hours in that shop and never came to see them for a good meal of an evening. She nodded glumly. She knew that was not true. She didn't go to see them because Richard would have found them boring. And he liked her to be around the flat, even if he had to go out on business himself. The doctor told her that she would get better. He was a cheerful man who assumed it was all like the flu and tonsillitis. You treated it, and that was that. You got on with the next thing. Somehow this approach suited Heather. It did get better, and she came out of hospital. She didn't feel strong enough to face her former home, so she spent the weekend with her mother and promised not to work too hard in that bookshop any more. Then she went to Ruth's and gave her permission to say, "I told you so," 20 times, and then never to say it again. And she went to Richard's office in the advertising agency. She had never dared to go there when they were together. She noticed, absently, that he had several large pictures of his wife and family. Richard told her that he'd moved his things out of the flat and paid the rent for 3 months in advance. They shook hands like strangers. "I'm very sorry about it all," he said, loosening his collar. "It should have worked out. Would have, you know, if you weren't so needy." "I'm sure you're right." Heather was as casual as if they were talking about the weather. It was either that or punch him in the face. It was amazing how much time there was in her life now. Time to do courses in bookselling. Time to spend hours in the store reading, learning. And when she was 35, she was the manager, admired and respected. She left the flat she had shared in what now seemed to her another life. She bought a small townhouse. And there was nothing wispy about Heather's hair now. It was immaculately styled. Her eyes were still large, but not anxious any more. Many men admired her, but she told them frankly that there was no place in her life for love. She had severe personality defects and was, she said, the wrong person to get involved with, all done very pleasantly and with a light but firm assurance that they'd had a lucky escape. Ruth said that she was an icon, a role model and a lesson to anyone who had ever loved a rat. It came down from high command that every store in the book chain should have a Valentine's Day display. Something imaginative with a selection of love stories, love poetry, funny Valentine books. It was a good marketing idea, they were told. All the managers began to plan the windows. All except Heather. She utterly refused. It was cheapening and commercializing a bookshop, she said. If the greetings card industry wished to debase itself, then that was no concern of hers. But she would not add to the sense of false expectation amongst young, vulnerable people. She would not let them think that somehow they were losers in life because nobody went into a bookshop and bought them a book of sonnets. In vain did they argue with her. Heather didn't have the same attitude about Christmas, they told her. She'd never been against promoting football books or tennis books if Wembley or Wimbledon were upcoming. But she was adamant. The chairman invited her to lunch to meet the creative director of the advertising agency. Just an hour before the lunch, Heather discovered that the creative director was Richard. She sent a message of great regret and a request that the creative director be told that this was a matter of principle and she was not being needy about it. She also said that it was an issue over which she would resign. The chairman was nonplussed, but the situation was clear to him. Advertising agencies were many and varied, but there were few managers as good as Heather. He had a lunch with the sharp and rather bad-tempered creative director, and then, as he had promised, he delivered the message. He had been warned that he must give her the exact reaction. It was disappointing. Richard merely raised his shoulders to his ears. "Sounds as if she's barking mad," he said. "Odd to feel so strong, certainly," the chairman said. "Is she a hideous old bat who never had a Valentine herself?" "No. On the contrary, most attractive woman in her 30s." "Probably premenstrual," Richard said. "Ignore her." The chairman found it hard to report this message, but he was a man of his word and did so. To his surprise, Heather laughed. "Well, he's learned nothing in the 10 years," she said cheerfully. "Come on, let me buy you a bottle of wine to celebrate." The chairman, who had fancied Heather greatly from a distance, was overjoyed. He invited her to dinner, and in a matter of weeks they were an item. And then, on St. Valentine's Day, shortly after 6 o'clock, in his office, she was offered the hand of the chairman as well. "I just got you a ring. I didn't dare get you a Valentine card, knowing your views," he said. They were personal, selfish, bitter views, Heather admitted. "You should have fired me." "You still haven't said whether you'll marry me or not." "When had you in mind?" Heather asked. "As soon as possible. Do you think we should live together first? You may not like me on close acquaintance. I'm very needy, I'm afraid." "Why do you say that? It's a horrible way to describe yourself." Heather looked distressed. "Whatever do you mean, needy?" The chairman was startled. "I suppose I mean that when I like people, I want to be with them a lot. And when I love someone, I want to be there all the time. I suppose I would want to share things, all sorts of things, with you, and know your views, and tell you everything that happens, and you might find it claustrophobic, even though it's all done with a loving heart." She looked at him for a while. "Is that what needy means?" she asked eventually. "It's what I mean by it," said the chairman. His face was full of warmth and love. "So it's a good thing to be, not a bad thing." She seemed mystified. He put his arms around her. "It couldn't be bad to need someone as much as I need you, could it, Heather?" he said into her hair. She pulled away from him. "I don't think our bookshops have ever given enough emphasis to dictionaries, you know," she said. "For years I've never understood the meaning of that word." "Heather, are you going to marry me, or are you going to stand here debating words and regretting you don't know what they mean?" "No. I'm glad I didn't know what it meant years ago. Everything turned out so much better because I didn't know. Maybe we need fewer dictionaries when you come to think of it." Then she asked, had he any paper around the place? The chairman looked at her, a mixture of adoration and despair, as she began to write. She wrote her first Valentine for many years, and because he loved and needed her so much, the chairman just sat and smiled as she drew the flowers and thought up the rhymes for the little poem.